Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sister and a special guest, Mister, or two. We never know. Hey, everybody. I hope everyone's having a great week. Happy Halloween. It is Halloween Day, and I hope everyone has a better week to follow. So hello, Pam. Hello, Naomi. And hello, Robert. Welcome to the party.
Yo.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
And
hi.
We have a special happy birthday, Robert.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, right.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes.
It's Art Calius's birthday, yes.
Oh, Art Calius's birthday. Pardon me. Pardon me. But anyway, it's good to have everybody here tonight. And I'm looking forward to some good Halloween poetry. And hopefully you are too. But yes. So let's see, what else is new? Everybody is doing good. Pam has snow. I doubt Robert has snow. He never has snow. Well, maybe.
I mean, I have a foggy brain, but that doesn't count.
You and me both. And Naomi, what's going on with you? Anything exciting? It's just cold here.
Yeah, well, we had we had snow down yesterday, and it left. It's gone now. But we had flurries this morning and flurries around 5 tonight. So wow. I'm expecting that we'll have snow during the night some time there, you know, because it's now below zero, the temperatures, but
yeah.
Here, yeah, but, Pam, mm-hmm. You have snow, like it stays, stick on snow?
Well, so far, it has melted a bit. It's not as much as it was this morning, and we're actually supposed to get back up to 45 by Thursday or Friday. And
nice.
So I'm not expecting it to stay around, but eventually it'll get to that point where it stays around for 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah.
Pam's winter lasts about 6 to 8 months a year, I think. My memory is correct. It's just chilly here, damp and chilly, and I don't like that. I don't do that very gracefully. I don't do much very gracefully, but I don't do that very gracefully at all. But, well, so everybody, let's see, Naomi said she had about 300 and some kids today for Halloween.
Yeah, 382, 81 or 82,
wow.
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gracious, yeah. It was like a parade, you know, it's like that every year. Yeah, and we counted the treat bags, you know. I had made up 421 because last year we had even more kids.
Wow.
And I, you know, ran out. So, but this year, I guess because of the cold, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a new building like behind our road. There's new houses that went all up there.
Wow.
And so I guess the kids, they go there to those new homes, you know, and left
yeah.
here.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, yeah, you know, it's
yeah.
not fair. But anyway, but 382, I mean that's enough, you know. Because,
that's a lot of kids.
Oh, yeah, my gracious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so cute to see all the costumes on, my gracious. Some
yeah.
people, they have these imaginations. Oh, my gracious, so funny.
Yeah.
The little ones, the tiny little ones, oh, they're so cute.
They're the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have about 6 kids. That was about it. The neighborhood was like, there's just not that many kids wander through here. Yeah, which is,
mm-hmm.
all right. It was a day. But then we all grew up and moved on. So, except me, I'm still here. Biggest kid on the block. But, yeah, but that's pretty cool. I can't imagine having that many kids knocking on the door. I'd be like, oh, my God.
I stand out, eh? I stand out for 3 hours straight with the bowl because, you know, I don't have time to come in the house at all. Yeah.
Right.
I ran into pee for 2 seconds there.
That's why you have extra candy bags.
But my gracious, it's a parade. It's an endless parade.
Yeah. That's very cool. Okay,
oh, yeah.
Kids. Well, we got a board full of poetry. And
mm-hmm.
I guess I must get started putting some up. So I'm going to, Pam, I'm going to ask you to read the first piece. And this is called Bleed a Song for Me, Dear, by Creatistically Inclined. Let me grab it and put it in the room. And whenever you are ready.
Bleed a song for me tonight, dear. Pour a curdling symphony from the gash betwixt your ribs. I want to feel your agony ripped from the place that once was peace, now a lowly loathing insect feast. Dear, I've been dead for far too long. This weight of lead leads me to wrong. Notions of what, as of late, stirs my thoughts like Rorschach ink. Can a soul evaporate? The deafening fog of fate, I think, has come to dissolve the memory of my stain on history. Of frost and flame, I do not know. I do feel lost, dear. Does it show? The bitter nipping fangs of ice, the membrane broiling scald of sun, They're nothing but a muted shun. I've only detached and diluted words of disputed woe to blindly iterate the indescribable sensations of an empty hole, my fate. The lukewarm soup in which I stew is tasteless bland, a humdrum broth of stale wry pity. Everything around seems gray. The colors of the rainbow fade. I'm floating in a briny haze. All that's left are long delayed, child-scrawled ideas of pain. A bloodless numb is what remains, like cotton stuck upon my tongue, a mothball bath or lengthy sip of Novocaine. My phantom senses make me think, am I real or wads of hair clogged in your sink? I've given up on subtleties creature comforts can't appease. That which I've lost and what I need is far beyond my sanity. Give me screeching, scraping, ripping, raking, peeling, tearing, torment now. Nothing short of torture, dear, holds appeal. I want what's real. Rake my thinnest tracks of skin with serrated rusty tins. Lift and peel, expose my flesh. I just need to feel again. Make it burn, dear, make it sting. Make the letting of my cold blood sing. Please, dear, please, pull this band-aid off my soul. Expose, expose those tender tendril flows of nerves that never end, brittle branching, nerve endings. And if exposure renders me to flatline incapacity, break a bottle on my corpse and drink to me and sink within the comfort of this requiem. In the end, I suffered slow. Leftover lover, let me go. End poem.
Nice read, Pam. Nice read. Okay, Robert, I'm going to start with you on this one.
Well, I have to say that it was a very visceral and brutal poem that, to me, seemed as though it was talking about that. At first, it seemed as though it was talking about like a love lost, and then maybe it I think it probably accelerated and amplified from there. Maybe the losing her was the last, or losing them was the last straw in the road to emptiness, and that they seemed to just want to feel anything, do anything just to feel again. And like they said, when it says, let's see, I'd give up on subtleties, creatures, comforts, can't appease that which I've lost and what I need is far beyond my sanity. Give me screeching, scraping, ripping, breaking, peeling, tearing, torment now. You know, they just need, they have the need to bleed, I guess. Just to feel at least somewhat, some semblance of humanity. And I can understand that to a point, you know, because a lot of times people find emptiness even when they don't want to, and they stumble into the pit and they fall and they keep on falling. And this person is begging for any tendril of hope or any feeling whatsoever to get out of it. So I thought it was a great piece.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, you know, when you feel that numbness, you're just numb. You know what makes you alive is your ability to feel emotion, you know, whether you're sad or whether, you know, you're lonely or whether you're happy or, you know, but when you're numb, you're just like, you're dead inside. And yeah, I can understand this because, you know, it happens to me sometimes, you know, when you just go numb. I really like the stanza, you know, the lukewarm soup in which I stew is tasteless, bland, a humdrum broth of stale rye pity. And, you know, all that stanza all throughout is just amazing, you know, the metaphors in there that to compare that to the being that numb feeling, just amazing. I love the imagery and the metaphors throughout this poem and the way it was written. Really a amazing, amazing, right?
Nice. Nice comments, guys. And just so everybody knows, I put the prompt up in the room. It actually was a bottles of poison. So it gives me a different kind of take on it. Like, okay, did we do them in? What's the deal? But definitely a nice piece. Pam, how about you? You want to comment next?
Yes, absolutely. I thought this was wonderful. It had a great flow to it. As Robert mentioned, the imagery was visceral, which worked really well for the subject. I like how the first stanza appears to be the voice of the person who was doing the tormenting, and the rest seems to be the person who is getting tormented. And I felt like it was basically this dark, visceral, gothic version of the song, Hit Me With Your Best Shot. You know, it's kind of like, I know that's silly, but.
No, but I get it.
You get that. Uh-huh. The first person's like, you know what? I'm going to torment you. I'm going to torment you. I'm going to kill you. And the person's like, you know what? I am completely numb. I have been broken over and over again. I've been deceived over again. I feel nothing, you know. And so therefore, you know, hit me with your best shot. Go ahead and torment me. You know, because at least then I'm feeling something. And if I die, and since you're the only person here, you know, celebrate my life with a drink. I also really liked how, and I don't know if they meant it this way, but when they say a frost and flame, I do not know, I do not feel lost, dear. Does it show? I felt like that was a nice subtle nod to Robert Frost's poem Fire and Ice. Where the first line says, some say the world will end in fire, some say in ice. And I thought that was really cool that even if they didn't mean it, that it made me think about that. But boy, did they get really dark and visceral with screeching, scraping, ripping, raking, peeling, tearing, torment now, nothing short of torture, dear, holds appeal. I want what's real. You know, great lines and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comments. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Robert.
I was going to say, I just wanted to, because Pam pointed out something to me about the fire and the ice. And I thought, too, that the fire and the ice, because I didn't see them as poison. I saw them as alcohol. But right. I think that's reflective of that, like it's supposed to mean that. I thought maybe because you know how sometimes liquor goes down hard and it burns and then you got the ice mm-hmm. on top of it. So, you know, that's what I don't know. I was kind of thinking that, too. But go ahead.
Possible. Absolutely. I thought this was a well-written piece and a clever take on the prompt. I like this. Where is it? Exposure renders me to flatline incapacity. Break a bottle on my corpse, then drink to me and sink within the comfort of this requiem. You know, I'm thinking, okay, well, you're going to do me in, that's fine, but make sure you take a drink because those bottles all have labels. They're all different kinds of poison. I thought that was clever. But I picked these up. I've given up on subtleties, creature comforts can't appease. That which I've lost and what I need is far beyond my sanity. Give me screeching, scraping, ripping, raking, peeling, tearing, torment now. Nothing short of torture, dear. Holds appeal. I want what's real. Rape my thinnest tracts of skin with serrated rusty tins. Lift and peel, expose my flesh. I just need to feel again. Which, definitely has a lot of something going on, you know. Like, make me feel something. I don't want to be numb anymore. You know, get me past this point. So, definitely a well-done piece. Great job. Okay, now for my next magic trick. Woohoo! Robert, I'm going to put this piece up for you. And this is a piece called Death by a Lover by Garch Wan.
Okie
dokie.
Death by a Lover. The quaintness of a comfy chair and a sparkling glass of wine. A warm, inviting fireplace and delectable foods to dine. Nothing could ruin the moment, an unscrupulous love affair. Sipping another glass of wine, he leans back in his comfy chair. The fireplace logs are crackling, There's something that's greatly amiss. The room he feels is spinning. He's falling into an abyss. He tries to stand, but he cannot. His chest is beginning to heave. Poisoned to death by his lover, he collapses down to his knees. In the next room, she is waiting for the poison to do its job. The dastardly deed now over, his fortune she finally robs. End poem.
Nice job, Robert. Nice job. This is the same prompt as the last one. Naomi, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, well, it's a great tale told, you know. You see him all comfy there in his chair with the sipping his glass of wine, the fireplace all comfy and snug. And all the while, you know, he's sipping that poison. And, you know, he finally collapses and she's in the next room and probably rubbing her hands together. All that money is coming to me. So, you know, a great, great Halloween tale told, really entertaining, and I really liked it. Amazing.
Nice comment, Naomi. And Pam, how about you?
Oh, this is a great rhyming poem and story told in just a few stanzas. It's really captivating and entertaining. Dark Wright on the moment of revenge that stops the beating heart. And that, you know, that black widow that is just simply out to get a pay. So excellent, right, and very well done.
Nice comment, Pam. And Robert, how about you?
Well, this is a tale as old as time, you know. You do what you can to get what you can. And apparently she had it out for him. And it kind of reminded me of the Christmas tale of Scrooge and all that, but like a weird twisted version to where, you know, she actually kills him and takes his money, or whoever actually kills him and takes his money. So yeah, this really brought a lot of thoughts to my mind. I like the build up, the setup. It was eloquently done, and it was done in a way to where it really set the environment, set the mood, and brought you into it. And then hit you with that last poison jab at the end. So I thought it was great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good comment. Okay. Give me a second. I'm trying to fix my own work. Okay. It says, I thought it was a good story told and a nice take on the chosen prompt. Well-written lines in the stanzas throughout. I picked it up here, and, you know, the fireplace logs are crackling. There's something that's greatly amiss. The room he feels is spinning. He's falling into an abyss. He tries to stand, but he cannot. His chest is beginning to heave, poisoned to death by his lover. He collapses down to his knees. I like the rhyme and meter of it, and I thought it was a nicely told tale. And, you know, it seemed really short. Like, after Robert was done reading, I'm like, that was, like, kind of quick. But I look, and there's a fair amount of stanzas. It's not, you know, quite as short as my brain was telling me. So well done, Garch, and thanks for sharing with us tonight. Much appreciated. Absolutely. Okay. Now, Naomi, that's going to bring me to you. And this piece is called Morsels of Ensorcel by Carolyn Eyre. So whenever you're ready.
Okay. Morsels of Ensorcel. Oh, boy, this starts off good. Treacle toffee crackles in the teeth of a vampire's bite. A taste so sickly sweet. Trick or treat? In a shadow's feast, the cloak of disguise lurks in the eyes. The croak of a raven amid harsh crows crawls on the skin. With the spider's spin, darkness dwells within cauldron, swirls. A mist on the marsh swirls to a banshee wail. and curdle the sky. Stretch pumpkin smirks, pop the bones of cinnamon ghosts, asphyxiating, ensnare in the wind's wave, awakens the grave. Trick or treat, taste so darkly sweet. And Paul.
Nice read, Naomi. Pam, you want to kick this one off?
Sure, absolutely. I thought this one was wonderful. I did have to look up the word ensorcel, which apparently means to enchant or be enchanting or, you know, something like that. But, you know, really great imagery. I like how she went, you know, it was interesting because I looked at this picture earlier, you know, and thought about, you know, what somebody would do with it. And I was glad to see somebody took this picture and found some inspiration with it because it is really intriguing. But I like how there's an almost like a subtlety. Like you could almost think of this as being, you know, playful with the idea of children getting treats. And yet at the same time, I think there's that underlying tone of, you know, with the mention of the vampires and the banshee wail and the curdles of sky of a rather dark feast going on. Really beautiful and brilliant. I really like the croak of a raven amid harsh crow's caw crawls on the skin with the spider's spin. Darkness dwells within cauldron swirls. You know, wonderful lines all the way through and very well done.
Nice comment, Pam. And Robert, how about you?
Well, for me, you know, here I go with comparisons again. But I don't know if you guys remember that in that movie, what was it? Cinderella, the Disney version, where the fairy godmother was like putting together her. What's that? Anyways, the fairy godmother was putting together the casting the spells and making the carriage and all that. So this is kind of like what I pictured a lot of magic happenings going on, like I said, a darker version of that, to where there's like the cauldrons bubbling and churning and the skies are darkening and the fog is kind of like, you know, swirling to their will, you know, it's a very awesome piece with visually captivating, like, and I really enjoyed it. And it does have that playful demeanor to it, but it also has like how Pam was saying, that serious undertone to where maybe these kids are in for their last treat type of thing. So who knows? But yeah, I thought it was great.
Nice comment. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, I think this was wonderfully written to that prompt because, see, you see the red cherry there, and in all the or the red, I suppose it's a cherry or an apple or something, and you know, it looks really yummy, like that's the treat, and all that's dark in the background, well, those are the tricks. You know, all the dark tricks that go on a Halloween night that's referenced to in the poem, like the vampire bites, the spiders, the raven. You know, I took it that way, you know, it's an excellent write to that prompt. Really, really well done. The imagery throughout it is just amazing. And, you know, and I just love how it flows, you know, flows down the page. Just amazing. So very, very well done indeed.
Yeah, I thought this was nicely penned. A great take on the prompt. You know, I saw those as poisoned apples or, you know, pseudo-poisoned apples. And that's why some were black and some were the only one was red. And I thought it was well done, and I really enjoyed it. A mist on the march twirls up to a banshee wail. The curls of the sky, stretch pumpkin smirks, pulp the bones of cinnamon ghosts, ensorceling and snare in the wand's wave, awakens the grave, Trick or Treat. I taste so darkly sweet. I thought they were good lines, like all the way through this. And it was different. It wasn't, the wording was different, and sourceling was definitely a unique word. But that's kind of what it, it made me think of, just poisoned apples when I saw the image. And, I guess, you know, that would be somewhat of yes, I love when I forget my words, all of them, but the spell that's on the apples. And I think that was kind of clever. So nice job, Carolyn Iron. Thank you for sharing with us. Absolutely. Okay. Let me see what I have next. Okay, Pam. I'm going to give you this next one. This one is by Anton Ansford. And, jeez Louise, hang on, I totally screwed up. Whatever. Okay, Pam. This one's by Anton Ansford, and it's called Blood Moon. So whenever you're ready.
The house began to shudder and shake in a synesthetic tribute to the moon's dark power. For this was no lover's moon, benign and playful, but the murder moon, the red moon, the melancholic mistress of pain and dark despair, the moon that no one wanted to see. Its crimson caresses clearly corrupt, countless corpses in her hell-born wake. Soon the so-called heavenly body frowned her cruelest smile and broke the house in two. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And Robert, that's going to start us off with you.
Well, it was what you call short and sweet. I really like the word synesthetic. Don't get to see that one too often. And, of course, I'm always a sucker for melancholic mistresses of pain. And you can't go wrong with the alliteration. Crimson caresses clearly corrupt countless corpses in her hell-born wake. Soon the so-called heavenly body frowned her cruelest smile and broke the house in two. I thought that was just an excellent way of putting that in. I don't know. It was very sinister and very deeply dark and very powerful. Like just that last stanza for me, like, 'cause I could just picture it happening, and I could feel the intent behind it. And I don't know. This one, it got under me more than I thought it was gonna, because the words. But hey, it was short, but like I said, it was sweet. So it did its job. Thank you for that, Anton.
Mm-hmm. Great comment. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, I really like this poem. You know, it's really dark. It's like Robert said, it's short and it's short and sweet, you know, but it's short and really, really wonderfully well written. It's very powerful, dark, powerful. There's something about it, you know, the blood moon. The house began to shudder and shake in a synesthetic tribute to the moon's dark power. You know, and then that last stanza, wow, you know, broke the house in two. Just like that, this moon, this dark despair that descends upon the, you know, the home and the house, and you imagine the people inside and just breaking everything apart, you know, to splinters, you know, in this evil grips, just amazingly well done. So a wonderful job. Who's this poet? Anton Ansford. Wonderful write for sure.
Absolutely. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I liked the imagery in this one and, you know, how it spoke on, it was really an excellent dark brevity on the evil that rips the home in two. And I like how he brought the moon to life and personified it. And great alliteration and melancholic mistress. I thought that was great and wonderful word choices and also a great alliteration. And its crimson caresses clearly corrupt countless corpses. Great imagery and really a wonderful deep dark write. Very well done.
Nice. Yeah, I have to say, I thought it was a great write as well. Nicely penned to the red moon prompt, because there was one prompt that was nothing but a red sky with a red moon in the background behind the trees. And I'm pretty sure that had to be the prompt that sparked it. But I enjoyed the alliteration in the piece, and I thought it was well done. The house began to shudder and shake as a synesthetic tribute to the moon's dark power. For this was no lover's moon, benign and playful, but a murder moon, the red moon, the melancholy mistress of pain and the dark despair, the moon that no one wanted to see. I thought that was, they were great lines. So thank you, Anton, very much for sharing with us. Good job. Good job. Good job. Hey, Northern Phoenix, welcome to the party. Absolutely. And Darkened Auras, too. And I already saw Stelina out there. So I'm hoping I'm not missing anybody else. And hello, Harko. Okay. Robert, this next piece I have for you, and this is called The Crows by Nick Baker.
All right. Let's see. The Crows. All right. The Crows by Nick Baker. The crows are out upon their toils in search of carrion and all that adds discolor to the spoils. This darkened fall, they stretch their wings across my mind, their chorus echoes down the lane in broken stanzas, unrefined, they come again. And as the dusk makes its descent upon the cursed woodlands near, the creatures make one last lament beside the weir. They have a mistress in the trees, for whom their deadly eye shall serve, whose rhymes shall Lucifer appease, whose songs unnerve. Towards the rookeries they fly, in preparation for a feast. Each imp will raise a battle cry, each godless beast. A silence falls, but for a while, as in the shadows nothing stirs, but crows watch on the cunning guile as she prepares. End poem.
Nice read, Robert. And Naomi, you want to kick us off?
Yeah. You just said, this is just amazing, the imagery all throughout, you know. Excellent dark right. Just imagine this mistress of, you know, this mistress of the darkness there in the woods, you know, with crows around her, even, you know, Lucifer kind of like singing to her, bowing to her, I don't know. But, you know, this great, you know, mistress of darkness that's hovering over all that's there. And you know, and leaves us with as she prepares. So it leaves us with a question just hanging there. You know, she's got, what evil is she gonna throw at everybody or gonna throw at the earth? So just amazing right all the way through, and it really captured my attention. So beautifully done.
Very nice. Nice job, Naomi. And Pam, how about you?
Oh yeah, this is great. I mean, the imagery, the spot on rhyme. I really like it all the way through, and how it tells the tale of a mistress of the dark that leads the battle cry. But I do especially like the use of the word rookeries in the second to last stanza. Towards the rookeries they fly in preparation for a feast. Each imp will raise a battle cry, each godless beast. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Nice. Nice comment, Pam. And Robert, how about you?
Well, I thought that the rhyme scheme was interesting because you had the regular interval with the lines, and then at that the last line is shorter, so it kind of catches you and pulls you back. But I really like this, the line, they stretch their wings across my mind, their chorus echoes down the lane, you know, because I like the idea of something encompassing or enveloping the mind, like, because the mind is such a vast thing in reality. Of course, it's only like a, well, some minds are smaller than others, but the actual mind itself is larger than the brain. So to think of something that's, you know, overshadowing, you know, your mind is both terrifying and also can be what do you call it? It's terrifying, yet it's also wondrous. It like causes like a fear, causes fear and wonder. So I thought he did a great job in the setup with the dusk makes its descent upon the cursed woodlands near. You know, the creatures make one last lament, you know. It brings even the animals and nature into it, all in reverence to this this goddess. So I thought it was awesome.
Nice comment. Yeah, I liked his choice of prompt in this one. It was a picture of a crow. And it says, I wouldn't describe my personality as dark. We all have our shadows, oddities that either attract or frighten others. I just choose not to silence mine. I thought that was kind of clever. And I thought the piece was well done. It was a good take on the prompt. And the crows are out upon their tolls in search of carrion and all that adds this color to the spoils this darkened fall. They stretch their wings across my mind, their chorus echoes down the lane. In broken gazes, or stanzas, unrefined, they come again. I thought I really enjoyed it, and I thought the imagery throughout was really good. So nice job, Nick, and thanks for sharing. I look forward to next Thanksgiving, next Halloween. God, I don't even know what holiday it is. That's terrible. Because, you know, Halloween is a holiday. Just thought I'd let you all know, in case there was any doubt. Okay, this next piece I'm going to put up is called Poisonous Intentions with a Deadly Invitation by Jenny the Deep. And I'm going to give it a read. But I know you're all sitting there going, you read one yet? And forget. Accepting your invitation for a nightcap ended up being a fatal mistake as we snacked. Raising our glasses to new possibilities eerily erased all my future opportunities. Choking on tonics of arsenic and cyanide, poison implodes and melts my insides. Boiling from within, my skin disintegrates, a potent scent of rotting flesh irritates. In your morbid mansion on this unholy day, melancholy melodies hauntingly play. On your wooden table displayed in this liquid death, toasting to new relationships caused my end. Beware of beautiful women who teasingly flirt. One drink, you'll be 6 feet under hazardous dirt. End poem. Yep. Naomi, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, that's really a great finish. One drink, you'll be 6 feet under hazardous dirt. beware of those beautiful women who teasingly flirt. But you know, all the way through, I just love this, you know, choking on tonics of arsenic and cyanide, poison implodes and melts my insides. Wow. Boiling from within, my skin disintegrates. A potent scent of rotting flesh irritates. I just imagine that. Yeah. This is really, you know, like eerie and like a good gross, you know. A greatly well written piece, you know, that's really dark and yeah, and it has that tale again, you know, these women, my gracious, all of these bad women tonight. Oh, boy, okay. But so well done, Jenny. Bravo.
Nice comment, Naomi. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I like this, and I like how everybody's zoning in on the idea, not everybody, but people who write to this picture seem to be, focusing in on the idea that historically women have used poison more for killing than men have. I thought this was a great dark write all the way through on the charm and beauty that betrays with the kiss of death. But I did especially like that second to last stanza with the lines, "In your morbid mansion on this unholy day, melancholy melodies hauntingly play." Wonderful lines and very well done.
Nice comment, Pam. And Robert, how about you?
Well, like Pam said, that is a good catch in the sense that subtlety is usually the female way of carrying out their crimes of passion. But I like the second to last stanza too, where it says, "On your wooden table displayed is liquid death, toasting to new relationships caused my end." So I'm trying to figure out, like, are they talking about previous relationships, and like every time they end up drinking, it all goes south? You know, there's a lot that could be unpacked there. There's a lot there. But choking on tonics of arsenic and cyanide, poison implodes and melts my insides. Yeah, that'll do it. That's basically what they're for. They're gonna destroy, and they're good at it. And that's why I thought this was a great prompt, and it really brought out a lot of great rights, because of all the fluidity, no pun intended, but it's that can be used therein. So yeah, I thought it was great, and it's a lot of fun rights. I mean, they're diabolical, don't get me wrong, but they're still fun.
That's what makes them fun, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought it was nicely penned by Jenny. And a great take on the chosen prompts. Again, she had 4 different prompts. And I could relate it very well to the poison, which I believe is prompt number 1, which I don't even see listed. So I'm a little confused. And for me to go back and check out 4 prompts, by the time I get back here, I'd forget what to tell you anyway. So I'm not going to lie. But, and you know, Pam, the most common way for a woman to murder someone is by poison. But I'm sure you
know. I knew that, yes.
I'm sure you
know.
Y'all are well educated.
That's our modus operandi.
That's right.
Yep. Men, well, I think they're a little more hands-on, but that's okay. Yes, I like, "In your morbid mansion on this unholy day, melancholy melodies hauntingly play. On your wooden table displayed is liquid death, toasting to new relationships caused my end. Beware of beautiful women who teasingly flirt. One drink, you'll be 6 foot under, hazardous dirt." I did like the way she tied it all up there in the last stanza, in the last couplet. So nice job, Jenny, and well done. Great piece. And I like it. Now let me see. Well, I lost the piece I was going to, so I guess I have to go and pull it up again. Story of my life. Okay, now I believe. Well, let me look again. Give me a minute. I'm a little slow here. That was me. So the next one, I think, is Naomi. So Naomi, if I can figure out how this damn thing is working. There we go. Okay. Here we go. I'm going to put this piece up for you. This is called "The Last Halloween Party" by Darkened Auras.
Okay.
And whenever you're ready.
Okay. "The Last Halloween Party. Come on in. Sit back. Relax. We have plenty to drink, some food and snacks. The bowl of almonds makes it so discreet that the red wine is laced with arsenic. The people in this town are all so toxic, so why not poison them all with a concoction of tonic. They said my parties were always dead. Well, this Halloween, it will be literal. Once everyone is fed. So drink and be merry. Let's all have a blast and live life like it could be. Because it will be your last. And
nice read, Naomi. Nice read. And Pam, how about you?
Oh, this is great. This is great. It's dark, it's creepy and fun, an excellent write on revenge poured and sipped. I really like how she gets into this character's voice of, you know, someone who just has it out against the whole town because they've constantly belittled and put down their parties. And I really like the people in this town are all so toxic, so why not poison them all with a concoction of tonic? Great write and very well done.
Nice comment, Pam. And Robert?
Yeah, this one had me smiling most of the way too, like from beginning to end, actually. The reason I have to say, y'all some dangerous women out here tonight, man. I'm going to have to watch my drink, I think. I'm going to use bottled water instead. But this is another one that it's really fun. And like I said, diabolical. And yet, awesome. The rhyme is great. Like it's very, the stanzas are very succinct and well kept, and structure is great. And the word choices I liked a lot. They said my parties were always dead. Well, this Halloween will be literal once everyone is fed. So drink and be merry, and let's have a blast and live life like it could be. Because it will be your last. And I thought the ending there was just really summed up the not sinister, but, well, I mean, I guess it could be sinister in nature, but it's not the word I was looking for. But, yeah, that was a great write, Dark and Doris, and I'm really glad that you put it out there.
Absolutely. Nice comment, Robert. And Naomi, how about you?
Oh, it was a real treat to read this. Oh, my gracious. You know, the way she, like Pam said, you know, she really uses the voice of the host of the party, you know, this woman that's scorned. And she's mad. She's friggin' mad the whole town. Oh, boy, she's mad. She's going to kill them all. Yeah, this is, you know, and in 92 words, you know, just, you know, this is just a brevity here, and she tells a whole tale and so excellently told too, you know, just with the converse, the language, the, like in a, what do you call that when one voice there, one person is talking, you know, she's just talking along there, and she's having a blast too, saying all this stuff, you know, it just seems like it. So really amazing write by Dark and Doris. I really, really enjoyed this one.
Nice comment. Yeah, I thought it was a great job by Christine and a good take on the prompt. Again, you know, those bottles of poison really made some headway in this contest. They said my parties were always dead. Well, this Halloween, it will be literal once everyone's fed. So drink and be merry. Let's all have a blast and live life like it could be, because it will be your last. I thought it was just well done. It was kind of like, yep, come on, let's party. I'll show you. You know, it just had a little bit of a attitude to it, but it wasn't dark.
Sassy.
Yeah, it wasn't a dark and pointed kind of thing. It had a bit of a sass to it. Exactly, Robert. Good words there. Yeah, it did. And that's kind of made it a little bit of fun, you know, even though she was bumping them all off. It still came out as being fun. So well done, Christine, and thank you for sharing with us tonight. Great job. Absolutely. Okay. Now, Pam, I have the next one for you, dear. And this is called Dystrophic. Dystrophic by E.J. Cool. doubting my words. Whenever you're ready.
I fog through dystrophic haze, bogged down by dead weight, smothered by decay and anemic green toxicity. I sink, unable to escape. At the bottom of this mucilant abyss, held by stoic silence, I watch sparkling sun shafts glint across the surface. Far above my head, wobbling bubbles slowly grow, faded for freedom I'll never know. End poem.
Nice read, Pam. Nice read. And here we go. More poisoning going on. I'm telling you. Okay, Robert, I'm going to let you start us off on this one.
Yeah, I thought this was an interesting route to go because, this is like speaking from the person who was poisoned rather than the person doing the poisoning, or maybe they poisoned themselves. And I slog through this dystrophic haze, bogged down by dead weight, you can't even move. You're just smothered by the decay and anemic green toxicity. I sink, unable to escape. The mucilant, yeah. At the bottom of this mucilant abyss, I never even heard that word, I have to say, and I think that's pretty cool. And held by stolid silence, or stolid silence, I should say. I watched the sparkling sun shafts glint across the surface. So that's the part that really made me think, like as you're kind of fading away, and a lot of people say they see a light or whatever, and there's like when they're coming to their end, like you see, they see some type of symbol showing them such, and that's the clouds of toxicity are being pierced sort of by this light of the end. So I don't know. I thought it was very, very morbid, but very appropriate, and a very interesting also perspective to go from. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great comment. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, you can take this in so many different ways, as somebody being poisoned or somebody just, being poisoned by their own mind and, sinking to the bottom of this mucilant abyss just by their own thoughts. Or somebody, even drowning, like in a bathtub. I got that feeling, the bubbles and the watching the sun glint across the surface or drowning in something anyway. You can take it in so many different ways. Oh my gracious, this poem is just absolutely amazing. So, I think wherever you are, in whatever mindset you are, you can just read it and take away so much from this poem. It's just so thought-provoking, and you just take away what you want from it, I guess, and the interpretation that you want. And so whether it be like a mental problem, depression even just being poisoned by something, you take away what you want from it. So in that way, just amazing, amazing right here.
Mm-hmm. Nice comment, Naomi. Yeah, I thought this was well done by EJ. I picked up the last two stanzas, at the bottom of this mucilant abyss, held by stolid silence. I watch sparkling sun shafts glint across the surface. So, it gives you that image of someone underwater who sees the light, shining on the surface, and it's like they can't get to it. At least, that would be what I would see. Far above my head, wobbling bubbles slowly grow, faded for freedom I'll never know. In other words, there's no coming back from this. I can't get myself out of this and catch my breath, or it's over. You kind of see that end just coming on, and being your demise, and kind of eerie, but I think it was at least the way I saw it, I thought it was a very good description of that. So nice job, EJ, and nicely done. Very, very good. Lots of good stuff tonight. Mm-hmm. Let me see now. I have... okay, Robert, it's going to bring me back to you. And this piece is by Bookworm Dave. And it's called Prompt One by Bookworm Dave. It's a bad day for titles.
All right. Ravens stood on the maple branches, singing their songs of fall, gathering their groups, knowing winter will be here soon enough. Corn cobs lay empty. Crows beat them. New fields will be found, flying in determined silence. In the distance, trick-or-treaters, ghouls, vampires, schoolgirls, gothic girls, wounded soldiers, playing a part of the macabre. As a night on bare mountain is blasted, no choice, they want treats, as do the ravens. This night before the feasts of all saints, nothing satanic about this group. Children tricking and treating with smiles, laughter, not cackles. Nor do the squawks from the birds scare them from their mission. Candy, coins, and maybe toys, and poem.
Nice read, Robert. Naomi, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, there's wonderful imagery in this poem. You know, you have the season of autumn here a lot. You know, the raven stood on the maple branches right from the beginning there. You create this image in your mind, singing their songs of fall. So right away, you know, you get to that season of fall. And then, you know, knowing winter will be here soon. Then he goes into the trick-or-treaters and all those costumes and all those kids, you know, all those things, the ghouls, the vampires, the gothic girls, and, you know, all this wonderful imagery of fall and Halloween all mixed in together, and it makes for a very wonderful, rich in imagery, wonderful, right?
Nice, Naomi. And Pam, how about you?
I thought this one was absolutely delightful. Wonderful imagery that paints and brings forth the many joys, sights, and sounds of October. Very well done.
Nice comment, Pam. And Robert, that brings me back to you.
Yeah, this it really set the tone, and it kind of encompasses the season, not just Halloween, but it starts off, you know, also in a sense where it talks about ravens stood on the maple branches singing their songs of fall, you know, gathering their groups, knowing winter will be there soon enough. So, you know, it already sets it up with a decent, like, environmental ploy. And then it brings in the corn and the trick-or-treaters and the hills. And they're laughing. They're having a good time. They're not cackling and being overly mischievous, you know. And they're just, you know, kids being kids in a time that, you know, or in a time and making it seem like the simple things that matter during Halloween and how it used to be, you know. So, yeah, I thought it was a great encompassing of fall and of Halloween. So.
Nice comment, Robert. Yeah, I thought it was a nicely told tale between the, you know, I don't know, he encompassed a lot in this time of year with great imagery throughout. Corn cobs lay empty, crows beat them. New fields will be found, flying in determined silence. In the distance, trick-or-treaters, ghouls, vampires, schoolgirls, gothic girls, wounded soldiers, playing a part of the macabre. As a night on Bear Mountain is blasted, no choice, they want treats, as do the ravens. I just thought it was well done. I thought it was just a lot of neat descriptions between the kids and the ravens and all that. I really do think it encompassed a lot for this time of year. I agree with you 100% there, Robert. Nicely done, and thanks for sharing with us, Bookworm Dave. Woo-hoo. Okay, Naomi, I'm coming back to you. And this is called Haunted Crimson Moon by Betty Page. So here we go.
Oh, Betty Page, yes.
Yes.
Okay, Haunted Crimson Moon. Longing and darkness, I'm feeling so tormented. Cruel separation, slashing both my wrists. I don't wish to live no more. I must end myself. It's been days, no years, since he smiled at me with love, since I saw his face. What have I become? Wrists are slowly bleeding out. Another swift cut. Sharp blades pierces neck. Hold my dagger in my hand. I'm slipping away. Know not who I am, in too much pain to move now. Yet I must go on. Wolves surrounding me, lustfully drooling with fangs awaiting my death. Owls observe all as forest animals sleep. I'm swiftly fading. Day turns into night. Deep crimson moon arises, bright as a phoenix. So captivating, haunting my mind are my ghosts, demons of my soul. I'm lost, wandering, going deeper in forests, need a place to hide. Chasing yesterday, moving swiftly past roses, tangled in its thorns. Running from myself, terrorized from all my pain, bleeding from both wrists, feeling out of breath, so dizzy, gasping for air. God, what have I done? Blood drips down my neck, slit my wrist, yet I still live. Days just sleepwalking, wearing my gold crown, I've become the queen of pain. Oh, where is my groom? Weightless I descend, cascades in my wedding dress, collapse beneath trees. Pretty autumn leaves, I feel myself ascending, flying high above. Finally, I'm free. I've never felt more alive. Headed towards love's light. Zooming, twirling round, I've now become immortal, shimmering, glowing, illuminated. Queen's ghost now rules this forest, swirling, translucent, searching for my love, ripped my heart right out of my chest as my gift to him, my heart still beating, echoing throughout the land, my pain so intense. Thought I was free, but realizing I'm alone without my true love. Our ships collided, crashed in the darkest of night many years ago. I've searched for decades. Where did he wander off to? Is he still alive? Not knowing kills me. It still does, although I'm dead, so I must find him. Again I wander. I search east, west, north, and south. Vanish with no trace. Feeling so alone, hollow, for I'm missing him. Running in circles. Screaming for revenge, both shipwrecked on this island, hurt, staggering around. Haunted honeymoon, consumed by finding my groom, feeling so helpless. I can hear laughter, psychotic, hysterical. God must be going insane, talking to myself. Think I have lost my mind, feel so tired, weak, can't give up now. I feel as if he is near, hear distant footsteps. I embrace the ground as I'm weeping heavily. This banshee's screaming, Will he hear my cries begging love come back to me? I can take no more. Please just answer me, love. Tell me, have you fallen? In darkness I cry. In silence I sleep off somewhere in the distance, winding down the trail. Beneath crimson moon wanders such a lonely man in search of his bride. End poem.
Nice read, Naomi. Well done. Well done. Pam, I know you stepped away. Did you get the chance to read all this at some point?
I did. I actually read it earlier. And, you know, I thought it was a brilliant write with her 575 lines, amazing imagery. It really was dark and epic. And, you know, besides being dark, it was also a wonderful love story of love separated by pain and death and the constant search to get back what once was. And I really thought this was great all the way through, but I especially like, I can't give up now. I feel as if he is near, hear distant footsteps. I embrace the ground as I'm weeping heavily, this banshee screaming. Will he hear my cries? And wonderful lines and very well done.
Nice. Nice job, Pam. And Robert, how about you?
Well, this it could be taken several ways, I think. But, like, at first I thought it was taken from the point of insanity. Like, I thought she just lost her mind and she lost her love, so she lost her mind. And then it turns out that maybe they both died. And then, you know, she was a ghost looking for him, searching for his spirit. But in the end, it seems as though she was the one who died, and he was looking for her, and he was still alive. So, I don't know, that there could be a lot of ways to go about it, and that's how I interpreted it, like, to where she at first I thought, like I said, she was going insane, but it turns out she was probably just dead the whole time and searching for him. And it just seemed like insanity because it's repetitious as the cycle of the spirit, you know, goes in the haunting and all that. But yeah, that was, if that's the case, that was very cleverly done. Like that end stanza really turned everything on its head for me. And I was like, oh, okay, that'll make a lot more sense now. So I think she always does a great job with her poetry. But, yeah, this is a very epic tale, and Betty did a good job here.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. And, you know, I didn't notice that quite at the end there, Robert, as you said in that last stanza. You know, beneath crimson moon wanders such a lonely man in search of his bride. And then at the beginning, it looked like she was upset for losing him. But maybe when she slid her wrists up there, she did herself in, which left him lonely in the end. It is a pretty cool way of looking at it, you know, and could very well be what Betty meant, because she definitely gave us angles on this. So I thought it was just a nicely penned piece. I looked at these lines. Weightless, I descend cascades in my wedding dress, collapse beneath trees. Pretty autumn leaves, I feel myself ascending, flying high above. Finally, I'm free. I've never felt more alive, headed towards love's light. Zooming, twirling round, I've now become immortal, shimmering, glowing, illuminated. Queen ghost now rules this forest. Swirling, translucent. That was nicely penned. And Naomi, how about you?
Well, while I was reading it, all I was thinking of was, oh, Romeo, Romeo, where art thou, Romeo? You know, it's like the story of Juliet and Romeo. And, you know, she's committing suicide, he committed suicide, and they're both wandering around looking for each other. You know, that's what came to my mind. So, yeah, so wonderful. You know, Pam used the word epic. And, yeah, it is an epic tale told. So just wonderfully written by Betty Page here.
Absolutely. Hey, and there was no poison in that prompt, just so you know. So Romeo and Juliet can't be it. Just saying. Just saying. Never mind.
Well, grief is its own poison. So.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? Okay, and the next piece I put up is called It Is a Bit Dark in Here by Julie Buck. And I'm going to give this one a read. Welcome to my home. Come in, have a seat. Care for something to drink? Mind where you step. It is a bit dark in here, don't you think? Let me light the candles for our Halloween dinner, made by me, cuisine for two. Pewter plates, silver salt shaker, vintage values, cloth gray napkins, all for you, all for you. Welcome to where I live. I have cookies. Does that make you smile? Yes, dinner wears a top hat. At my tiny wooden table, and I fully expect for you to stay a while. Just so we're clear on that. End poem. Okay. Pam, you want to kick us off?
Absolutely. This is great. That one line makes me think of the saying, welcome to the dark side. We have cookies.
That's right.
Welcome to where I live. I have cookies. Yeah, wonderful imagery. And I like how there's a perfect balance within this, right? The darkness is subtle, and yet there's these wonderful, creepy undertones and the invitation to stay that kind of makes you think of the song Hotel California with you know, you can check in, but you can never leave.
Yeah.
So great take on the chosen prompt and very well done.
Absolutely. It's so funny because I thought the same thing when I read the cookie line. Robert, how about you?
Yeah, I had a very similar take on it too, with the Hotel California. I was thinking about that. You know, welcome to where I live. I have cookies. Does that make you smile? Yes, dinner wears a top hat at my tiny wooden table, and I fully expect you to stay a while, just so we're clear on that. So it's like, it seems like a, like as though, you know, you're have your freedom and you're welcome here, but don't plan on leaving anytime soon. And that whole, just that part, like just that little ending line there, really kind of ignited the rest of the undertone, like in the poem. Is like, oh, okay, now I see. So you're not being merely kind, you're getting something out of it. What that is, it's not fully clear, but it's minimally the eternal company. So I like that.
Absolutely. And Naomi, how about you?
Well, I zoomed in on the word top hat, you know, so I imagine all these men standing around at a funeral in their suits and their top hats, you know, way back in the time. So, you know, welcome to my dinner, but, you know, dinner wears like a passage to a funeral, you know, to maybe your funeral. So, you know, that's the way I took it. And I really zoomed in to top hat. And, you know, everything's gray and everything is cold, like the, you know, and, yeah, like Pam said, Robert, you know, there's a subtle undertones of darkness to this poetry, and creepy. It's like eerie and creepy. So very, very well done, Julie Buck.
Right. Yeah, I thought this was a nice job by Julie. And I thought it was clever thoughts throughout. And there was definitely an undertone to all of this. I liked her take on the prompt. The image was kind of a creepy looking table, you know, and what have you. But welcome to my home. Come in, have a seat. Care for something to drink? I'm thinking not after all the poison we've had floating around here tonight. Mind where you step. Mind where you step. It is a bit dark in there here, don't you think? Okay, yeah, it is. Let me light the candles for our Halloween dinner, made by me. Cuisine for two. Pewter plates, silver salt shaker, vintage values, cloth gray napkins, all for you, All for you. That all for you, all for you is a little unnerving, you know. Something about that just feel creepy. I'm not sure why, but it did. Maybe it's just the way I read it. I don't know, but it made me feel creepy. But yeah, but that next line did give me a chuckle, so it took me right out of all that, like, darkness. You know, welcome to where I live. I have cookies. Does that make you smile? That really did give me a chuckle. And when Pam said that about welcome to the dark side, we have cookies, I did. It went through my head as I read that, and I'm going, oh, God. And I don't think that's exactly what Julie meant, but I'm sure there may have been an inference to it, you know, to saying, yeah, look. But good piece. And well done, Julie. And thank you so much for writing and sharing with us tonight. I thought it was well done. Absolutely. Now, let me go back over here. And I'm going to grab one for Pam, and then we're going to go there. Okay. Pam, I got this next piece for you called Haunted Heart. And this is by Stephanie Licori. And whenever you're ready.
Ghost of shadows past roam, like a mist of deepest night zone. Float silently, mind is heightening, flash mind's eyes, sudden lightning. Spooky sounds from beyond abound, creeping about my hollow ground. Empty echoes, I can't be saved, deathly lonely as a flowered grave. Rapid beats, pulse go madly, cold thoughts touch so sadly, grabbing, scratching, evoking soul, digging deeper a permanent hole. Essence of life ebbing gray, wind howls gusting away, shadows play on inner walls, creaking around darkened halls. Dying tree of skeletal hands, holding me down, I cannot stand, never letting me free to be, story died deep inside of me. I'm a true possessed place, dead and gone from this space, fleeing from frightened time, macabre feelings, dread climbs, mood whispers, disembodied moans, most desire to be called home, where peace and rest can abide, exorcist sage, my haunted inside. End poem.
Nice job, Pam. Nice job. Robert, can you start us off, or should I go to Naomi first?
All right. I this is right down my alley as far as darkness goes and inner turmoil and all that. The description that she uses. It's very, she used the word macabre, but yeah, it's very macabre. I like the essence of life ebbing gray, wind howls gusting away, shadows play on inner walls, creaking around darkened halls. It's like, the whole ambiance and the feelings that you get is just, there's a sense of dread, like a real sense of dread there. And in the beginning, even, ghosts of shadows past roam like a mist of deepest night zone. Float silently, mind is heightening, flash mind's eye, sudden lightning. And then the spooky sounds from beyond abound, creeping about my hollow ground. Empty echoes, I can't be saved, death lonely as the flowered grave. That is, I really like that line, deathly lonely as the flowered grave. That really gives you this... because, a lot of times the graves are forgotten. They're just left there. They're put flowers there, and then that's it. No one else goes and tends to them. No one visits. They're just lonely. So, wow. That was a great line and a great poem.
Nice comment. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, I really like this. Every single stanza, is so dark and haunting and eerie. Robert mentioned macabre, and, it is all through, just somebody who wants to escape those that feeling of, I don't know, that feeling of, you know, where they can't find any peace, they can't find any rest, they're just like haunted by their past, you know, that's just like he says in one of the stanzas, like dying trees of skeletal hands holding me down, I cannot stand, never letting me free to be. Story died deep inside of me. You know, she just wants to escape all that and find this peace through, you know, exorcism and just be free at last, you know. So just amazing, right, by Stephanie Licori here. Amazing.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this definitely had amazing imagery. It was a wonderful, dark, and emotive write on exercising the ghosts of the past from the heart. And I especially like the line, dying tree of skeletal hands holding me down, I cannot stand, never letting me free to be, story died deep inside of me. The idea of someone whose own voice was suppressed. So excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought this was a great piece as well. She didn't list a prompt, so I'm not sure that she even went with one. I would assume somewhere there was a touch on one of them. But the lines, I really liked the last three stanzas. Dying tree of skeletal hands holding me down, I cannot stand, never letting me free to be, story died deep inside of me. I'm a true possessed place, dead and gone from this space, fleeing from frightened times, macabre feelings, dread climbs, mood whispers, disembodied moans, most desired to be called home, where peace and rest can abide, exorcist sage, my haunted insides. And I think that it was just, it was really well written, and it does have that wonderful darkness or macabre tone to it all the way through. And I think that it was just wonderfully done. So thank you, Stephanie Licori. Hope to see more of you throughout the year. And if not, we'll be looking for you next Halloween. But well done. Okay. Sorry. Got to put in those last couple letters. And where am I going now? Do I know? No. Yes, I do. I know where I'm going. Damn it. That's scary, isn't it? Okay. This next piece is for tonight's show, Compliments of Robert M. And this is called Cry Wolf. I also have an audio, so let me put that on. And Naomi fell off the line. Uh-oh. Here we go.
This is my recital of Cry Wolf. On this night where shadows hiss, Mother Moon blesses me with her kiss. I draw my strength from her gentle glow. Under her gaze, much blood will flow. It is my nature to hunt and kill, not merely for some paltry thrill. I am the child of 100 curses, of which hags and sirens hum their verses. I am a nightmare made into truth, to rob the townsmen of their youth. For centuries it has been this way, I rise to wreak havoc in bloody display. When the first of hags was torn and hung, the first of the songs of wrath were sung. Her sisters gathered their collective hate and doomed this land to a gruesome fate. I was the last child that drew breath and was taken and sentenced to a life of death. They branded me with symbols and runes and fed me flesh over many full moons. They chanted and hymned and danced and wailed, while my heart, mind, and soul were assailed. My humanity was shredded, my will was torn. That night I had died and been reborn. Unlike lesser beasts, there is no reversion. I must don this visage in all its perversion. I am bound to this distorted, terrifying husk as a perpetual horror that reaps the dusk. I will never know light as I once knew. I can never taste the joy where I once grew. I shan't ever feel a tender, warm embrace or draw comfort again from a loved one's face. This is no life. I am a puppet enslaved, and with murder after murder, I cannot be saved. So much of my suffering will go unseen, buried beneath the carnage of this wolf-like sheen. Hatred and anger have destroyed the soul and diminished all sense of self or control. So when autumn arrives and makes her calling, and the darkest of shadows come hissing and crawling, know that merciless bloodshed and evil run rife, and if you hear a howl, you run for your life.
Are you on mute, Gene?
No.
Oh.
No. I still heard it playing, so I just shut it off. Excellent piece, right? Yeah. Pam, you want to start us off?
Sure, no problem. Yeah, this was brilliant. The rhyme, of course, as always, was spot on. I really liked the performance, how you put an extra growl in your voice. I mean, you know, you definitely always have an amazing reading voice, but you really got into the character of this wolf man, this wolf child, this prisoner, you know, and with that growl. And, you know, I really like the story in this and how it speaks on how he is a killer, and yet he's very self-aware that he's never been given any choice in life. From the moment of his birth, he's been groomed and transformed to become a killer. And I really like this all the way through. I do like especially when the first of Hags was torn and hung, the first of the songs of wrath were sung. Her sisters gathered their collective hate and doomed this land to a gruesome fate. And then, unlike lesser beasts, there is no reversion. I must don this visage in all its perversion. I am bound to this distorted, terrifying husk as a perpetual horror that reaps the dust. Amazing dark right all the way through, and very well done, Robert. I'm glad you shared this with us.
Thank you.
Yep, I agree. I'd ask Naomi, but Naomi had to drop. She had a family phone call that she had to take. But Robert, this was a great piece. As I had said to you earlier, I really loved that first stanza. There was something, I just loved the way it read. You know, on this night where shadows hiss, Mother Moon blesses me with her kiss. I draw my strength from her gentle glow. Under her gaze, much blood will flow. You know, and your second stanza that followed that was good as well. It is my nature to hunt and kill, but not merely for some paltry thrill. I am the child of 100 curses, of which hags and sirens hum their verses. They were just excellent stanzas. But once, you know, when I mentioned earlier, I said, you know, the other three stanzas down a little further. When the first of hags was torn and hung, the first of the songs of wrath were sung. Her sisters gathered their collective hate and doomed this land to a gruesome fate. I was the last child that drew breath and was taken and sentenced to a life of death. They branded me with symbols and runes and fed me flesh over many moons. They chanted and hymned and danced and wailed while my heart, mind, and soul were assailed. My humanity was shredded. My will was torn. That night I had died and been reborn. Just fabulous. you know, as Pam said, your rights are always so good. And the darkness in your rights is always, you know, pretty awesome. This is no different in that respect. It's good. And it comes from a place that's a little different. You know, I like the fact of the hags and the sirens and, you know, how this character was created from them, you know. But, yeah, definitely a wonderful piece. Great audio, as always. And I think Pam just likes to hear you growl, to say.
Mm,
yeah.
Oh, you know it. You know it.
See?
You know, I would, if I actually had the money, I would pay to hear Robert growl.
Well, luckily you had to hear for free this time. So,
yeah.
I have done it once before, and that was my first trial, but that was many moons ago. But yeah, I thought I was inspired like immediately, and I don't know, I started writing about it, but then it just changed in the beginning. Like from the first stanza, I went a whole different direction of what the poem was supposed to be about, because my feelings had changed and I went down another track. So I'm glad it turned out the way that it did, and I actually like this piece, and I don't normally like my poetry that much, but I actually like this one a lot. So yeah, thanks for giving me the inspiration.
Very cool. Awesome sauce. And I'm so glad you shared it with us, because that was excellent. Uh-oh. Robbie's poetry said he can almost do predator sound from his throat.
Yeah, it's a Rob thing.
It must, you know, maybe that's it.
It must be.
Damn, you better start counting your change.
There you go.
I know, right?
You got another dollar dispenser over there.
Wow.
There you go.
Getting scary around here. Hey, Pam, we could change the whole image of this radio. You know, we got a couple extra. We got an open show. We could kind of. Yeah.
You got to bring in some of that 70s adult film music, though, like from back in the days.
Oh, God. You're in charge of finding that. Oh, my gosh. Jeez Louise. Okay. Well, the next piece I'm going to put up is a piece called Witch's Halloween by Vicki Moore. And since we don't have Naomi, I guess I'll read it. It's all right. Not a big deal. Witch's Halloween by Vicki Moore. Two new black brooms for sweeping, used to dispel evil things, a bottle of herbs used for healing, and a spider for using in potions. Spider webs drift out of the cauldron, and a raven keeps watch over all, a sign to remind one of the witch's way, to hang in a room where she works. Halloween is a time for giving, and it is not evil at all. I'm sure my sister will love this gift, as we do our good works tonight. End poem. Uh-huh. Okay. Pam, I guess I'm coming to you.
Well, this was a wonderful take on that prompt. That ending especially gave me a smile with the whole idea of the two witchy sisters spending a night of bonding over good deeds. You know, nice imagery. Really sweet, and I like the ending and also the line, a sign to remind one of the witch's way to hang in the room where she works. You know, great light, right, and very well done.
Nice comment, Pam. And Robert, how about you?
Yeah, I like the sense, you know, that they instilled to her. It's not like a lot of people think, oh, Halloween's evil, this and that. And a lot of these things were stolen anyways, like a lot of the meanings and the holidays and whatever, they were stolen, and stuff like that, like Christmas and Halloween are two of the big ones. But this kind of casts away that notion that it's a bad thing. It's not necessarily a night of evil or whatever. It's this brings it back to how it's supposed to be. It's like a tradition, like a human tradition, you know, like it's people getting together and doing things together, whether it be spells or witchcraft or whatever you want it to be, you know, cooking, right. Making potions, doing alchemy, whatever. I really like the homeliness of it, and like there's another word that I'm trying to think. Wholesome. Yeah, the wholesomeness of it as well. Like it brings all that, it brings it all back and brings it all in and reminds you that it's not necessarily a bad time or a time where you should go around, you know, doing stuff to animals or whatever. This is just, it's just basically a time of gathering and sharing. So I thought it was a great reminder of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I thought it was a great take on the prompt. And it was. It was kind of more of a friendly and carefree kind of a share. You know, there was no darkness to it. And it was just, you know, lighthearted. And I like that. I thought it was a nice job. So thank you so much, Vicki Moore, for sharing that with us. Much appreciated it. Okay. Now, Pam, I think I'm coming to you. And this piece is by Phoenix Wrights called Flicker in the Window. So whenever you're ready.
Sitting in the foyer as dusk slowly sinks into darkness, the evening breeze causing flutters in the gossamer valances. In my peripheral, a shimmer flickers into the shaded hollowness that rests upon the cream and eggshell damask drapes. The leaves on the miniature citrus tree tremble in the shadows as my nightly uninvited visitor once again appears, floating among the sheer fabric, fading into the throes below. He settles in to spend the hours of the night haunting me with silence, haunting me with endless thoughts, agonizing thoughts of all that was lost, all that could have been, staring into the brokenness that make up my soul, haunting me, judging me for crimes I cannot defend. On and on as the hours creep along, painfully, mercilessly, the specter floats in the deepening dark, gaze burning, tears begin to seep as they do each night endlessly, rivets showing the despair that strips bare my flesh and will. The teacup on my lap rattles upon each whimpered inhale, the darkness now complete, the sliver of the waning moon dim, the shimmer of the flickering apparition, crystalline and pale, as nearby church bells peal out their midnight call, haunting me with their tone, haunting me with the echoing rings, reminding me, awakening raw memories of all that should have been, of the loss that flickers upon the cushion on the window seat, haunting me with a truth I can never ignore, a pain I cannot defend. The shadows continue on, passing through the night into the dawn. Finally, the light of day breaks the sun, kisses the horizon. My eyes stare at the empty hollow. My apparition is gone. Still no peace will I find, for I am haunted, haunted by the blood that stains these walls. And poem.
Wow. Great read, Pam. And Robert, what you got to say?
Well, this, of course, is a deeply relatable poem in the sense that it speaks like to the haunting, obviously, because it's strewn throughout the entire poem. And that in itself, it's like it comes back, you know, like a refrain of sorts. To where it repeats itself to instill it in your brain, kind of how a lot of Poe's work used to do, to where he'll bring back one word like nevermore or something like that,
right.
And then he'll keep on and it'll be strewn throughout the poem to kind of instill like this foreboding and this feeling of dread in you. And I like this one a lot because, like I said, I can relate to it. Like, oh, on and on as the hours creep along, painfully, mercilessly, the specter floats in the deepening dark, gaze burning. Tears begin to seep as they do each night endlessly, rivets showing the despair that strips bare my flesh and will, you know? So it could be taken a multitude of ways, but, you know, metaphorical, obviously. But then there's those, like I was saying, like the impending dread and the repetitious doom and the, you know, the feeling, the cycle that permeates every day. It just repeats and repeats. And it also brings to mind that it could be like a ghost haunting other ghosts, you know, tormenting souls, tormenting other souls, you know, for eternity. And it'd be a version of hell, so to speak. Because if there are spirits, I mean, there's plenty of place for them to be. And if they're any echo of our humanity, then that means there's, you know, people that are not so nice on the other side. So anyways, this gave me a lot to think about. So, and I like the title too, Flicker in the Window. So thanks for that, Phoenix.
Absolutely. And Pam?
Yeah, this is a great dark write. I like how it's layered and be taken in different ways. Although I think like Robert was mentioning, the most obvious interpretation is the idea of someone haunted by their own conscience, you know, their own guilt, their own past. I really like the attention to detail, the imagery, like the leaves on the miniature citrus tree tremble in the shadows as my nightly uninvited visitor once again appears. And I really like also on and on as the hours creep along painfully, mercilessly. I think when you're haunted about those thoughts of the past, especially in the nighttime hours, it seems as if those each minute just goes by so slowly. So amazing dark write and very well done.
Right. Yeah, I thought this was a great piece as well. Nicely written. And I did like the repeat of haunting. I thought that was a great way to put some emphasis. I had picked out two stanzas, but I kind of dropped down one because I wasn't sure which way I wanted to go. But haunting me with their tone, haunting me with the echoing rings, reminding me, awakening raw memories of all that should have been, of the lost that flickers upon the cushion on the window seat, haunting me with a truth I can never ignore, a pain I cannot defend. The shadows continue on, passing through the night into the dawn. Finally, the light of day breaks. The sun kisses the horizon. My eyes stare at the empty hollow. My apparition is gone. Still no peace will I find, for I am haunted, haunted by the blood that stains these walls. There's something really strong that in that ending line, it kind of puts a whole new twist on things in my mind. And I think it was very nicely done, a real full piece, detailed, and great imagery and wonderful thoughts throughout. So nicely done, Phoenix writes, and thank you so much for sharing with us tonight. Now, who's dinging? Somebody's dinging. Okay, got it. Let me see now. We have a few. We're going to have a few carryovers for Sunday. Okay, let me grab this one. Because Robert's going to be right back, so I can't have him read if he's not here.
Maryland, back.
You're back? Well, then I can have you read. Okay, good. Then I can keep coming down this list. I'm going to grab this piece by Gerald Green, and it's called What Shall I Do? And we'll be up in a second. There we go. Okay, whenever you're ready.
What Shall I Do by Gerald E. Green. No, it says there's an audio.
It does? Well, I can do that. Top. I'll give you another one. Here, I didn't know there was an audio. Last time I looked, I did not see one.
Yeah, because okay. It says play audio beneath the picture right there.
Okay. Awesome sauce. Maybe I just missed it. Okay, there you go. This one's by Marvelous Jarvis, The Voice That Speaks.
All right, The Voice That Speaks by Marvelous Jarvis. To see the place I stay, it would be highly advised, because you may run into someone wearing a disguise. But have no worries and watch where you step, because there is something that happens almost like a vague breath that creeps up on you and whispers words all the time, and it says, help me, please. Then you will lose your mind. Once it does start, it doesn't stop until you respond. I'm okay with it now. We have become very fond. And speak all the time now, but for the normal Joe, you may find a reason to just get up and go. The things of the afterlife really don't bother me. It's the fake people in this world that can't see not only what they're doing to each other, but what they do, what they don't do at all, like help you. When stuff goes south, I won't even give you a call. If you ever come down south my way, you're welcome always to stay. And just hang with me and the voice that creeps around the house. Sometimes it may wake you, but it usually... it's as quiet as a mouse in poem. My apologies. The font kind of threw me off a little bit. But that's my fault. And I'm sorry about the...
Okay.
No worries. That, you know, that font throws me off, too. In fact, I was thinking earlier, I really hope Robert or Phil takes that poem because, oh, man, I tell you. But I thought it was a great read. And Gene, are you on mute?
Well, I was because I was loading that other audio.
That's right. Yep.
Yes. I'm back now, though. But go ahead and comment, Pam. That would be great.
All right. Yeah. Well, and I did think that this was a wonderful write. You know, and I like how he gets real about it, you know, about how, when he says, the things of the afterlife really don't bother me. It's the fake people in this world that can't see. You know, I like how he goes in on the reality of life, which is, you know, the afterlife, death, you know, even, you know, the things of Halloween are not what we should be afraid of. Rather, we should be afraid of the fake people, the liars, you know, the way we treat each other. And I liked the offering of hospitality within the end line. So great write and very well done.
Absolutely. And Robert, how about you?
Well, Pam touched on what I was going to say about the hospitality and the fakeness. Because my great grandma used to have a saying that she told to my grandma. And she tried to pass it down to me, but it didn't work. She said, it ain't the dead ones you got to worry about. It's the live ones that will hurt you. And a lot of that's true in a lot of ways, although both have their both have their dangers. So that really brings the humanity into it, you know, like at first it was like, he's like, whoa, you know, there's this ghost and whatever. And then he ends up making friends with it. So that's cool. And then later on, he ends up just being like second nature to him, you know. And he's like, I don't have any worry of them. And I like that they put that in there, because I always like poems that are relatable and have a tad of humanism in them, and this really touched on that. And the hospitality is always nice. So these types of poems peppered into the gruesome darkness are always welcome. So.
Amen. Okay, well, great comments, guys, and I wasn't reading it and I didn't hear it, so I was overdoing my other thing. So sorry, I'll have to leave a comment in writing, Marvelous Jarvis. Much appreciated it. Now, piece I'm going to put up next is What Shall I Do by Gerald Green. Hey, and I have an audio for this. Maybe I'll play it. I know I'm an ass. I can't help myself. Here we go. How about now?
What Shall I Do? Written and read by Gerald Green. There's a ghost in my bathtub. What shall I do? It looks like it's sticky and covered with goo. Do you think it is dangerous sitting like that without a black bat or scary-looking cat? I'm sensing some hesitance. Maybe it's shy. I don't want to scare it and cause it to cry. Or could it be friendly, wanting to smile, hoping to stay here and visit a while? I'll muster some courage, maybe tonight, dare to approach it in waxing moonlight. With words softly spoken, I'll ask it its name, to test its demeanor and see if it's tame. I'll carry a Bible and cover my heart, protecting my body from evil's black art. If I take a picture, then you will believe I am not mistaken, deceived, or naive. And then I'll be famous. I'll brag and I'll boast about my position as host of a ghost.
Okay. Well, this is a good one by Gerald. Pam, you want to start us off?
Yes, this was a good one. And I did get a chuckle out of that ending. I'll brag and I'll boast about my position as host of a ghost. But wonderful lines all the way through. And I especially like how he brings us into the idea of wondering about what's going on with the ghost. And, I'll muster some courage maybe tonight, dare to approach it in waxing moonlight. And I'm sensing some hesitance. Maybe it's shy. I don't want to scare it and cause it to cry. You know, wonderful lines and very well done.
Absolutely. And Robert, how about you?
Well, to me, it seemed to follow along the Seussian lines, like Dr. Seuss. It really reminded me of that in its cadence because, there's a ghost in my bathtub. What shall I do? It looks like it's sticky and covered with goo. You know, it follows that whole, child time, childlike story time, And I really dig that because that's what got me into poetry a lot, you know, was that Dr. Seuss and Edgar Allan Poe are basically the things that got me into poetry. And it really opened and widened my imagination, and it kind of gives me a sense of nostalgia in a way, even though I've never read the poem before. But it puts me back in that time to where I was inspired. And that's what it's also very playful, obviously, mm-hmm. And it throws in some superstition and but the rhyme was on point, obviously. That the ending though, is, then I'll be famous, I'll brag, and I'll boast about my position as host of a ghost. That part reminded me of Beetlejuice. Obviously, was like, I'm the ghost of the ghost, babes. You know, it kind of reminded me of that. So yeah, I don't know. I thought it was a fun poem all around, and I'm glad to hear him read it in his own voice. So, well done, Gerald.
Absolutely, I have to agree. I love the rhyme in it. I love the humor in it. And I'm with you. I kept thinking to myself, God, this sounds like someone reading a child's poem, you know, or a child's story or whatever. And I'm like, that's so unusual. Because I thought that was a neat take for Gerald, because I'm used to him doing a more serious kind of write. And this had a totally different feeling for me from him. And I think it was wonderful. I really do. And when you said Dr. Seuss, I had to laugh and go, yeah, maybe that's kind of where, you know, I was getting that narrative from, you know, sounding like a child's narration. But it was a great piece. I like the, there's a ghost in my bathtub. What shall I do? It looks like it's sticky and covered with goo. Do you think it is dangerous sitting like that without a black bat or a scary looking cat? I'm sensing some hesitance. Maybe it's shy. I don't want to scare it and cause it to cry. I started laughing. I'm going, okay. he's considerate of the ghost and how he might feel. You know, or could it be friendly, wanting to smile, hoping to stay here and visit a while? I muster some courage maybe tonight, dare to approach it in waxing moonlight. I really enjoyed it, and I thought it was a very, I don't know, it was a fun piece. So great job, Gerald, and thanks for writing for us for the contest and for tonight. I enjoyed it very much. So with that being said, what do we have? We have no time left. Seems like the party is over. But thank you, Robert, for joining us tonight. And Pam, thanks for running the phones. Great job, as always. We have a couple carryovers for Friday, but, you know, I think there's two or three. So that will work. And, yeah, I hope you guys have a great rest of the night and good day tomorrow. And hope you do it again next year. Happy birthday, Robert.
Well, thank you kindly. Good night, everybody. Thanks for everybody showing up.
Good night, hon. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Always appreciate you. Bye-bye. Pam?